It's Magnum Podcast. I'm Jason Snell, joined as always by David J. Lohr and Philip Michaels. Hi, guys.
Jason, I never joke about softball.
Boys, I'm freezing for the deason.
I don't really know very much about softball rules, Uncle.
It's Eddie Deason, everybody. Everybody's favorite.
Eddie.
One of the great auteurs of the 20th century, Eddie Deason. Dick Shaw. Eddie Deason. Eddie Deason is in this episode.
You
squeeze
know,
play.
If you were to ever open up a time capsule from the late 70s, early 80s, you would not need to date it if Eddie Deason
Eddie
pops
Deason,
out.
Which go, is full right
yes.
Put me in this time capsule? Go.
Yeah. Season 4, Episode 7, Squeeze Play. Featuring Dick Shawn as Buzz Benoit, who is
a Hugh Hefner
Mankey.
Larry Flint type. Hugh Hefner,
Larry Flint,
Flint
Bob Guccione type. Yes, he's a sleazy magazine publisher, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Orson Welles, very prominent in this episode, is the voice of Robin Masters, with, of course, we never see his face.
Wearing one of the most fascinating ruffled tuxedos so ruffled that even the sleeves are ruffled, like he's a magic man of some sort.
I mean, he did tend to wear those, and so I'm sure the costumers were like, oh, we'll make sure people know this is Orson Welles, even though it's not Orson Welles. It's this opening scene where he and Dick Shawn are playing cards, quote unquote, and neither pair of hands is Dick Shawn or Orson Welles.
Wow.
What they're doing here in this opening scene, they're gambling, and there's a bet that basically they bet a woman. So it's basically human trafficking happening here.
A little problematic.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, so I watched this episode. Well, my wife does not watch Magnum P.I. with me, but for whatever reason, she watched this episode sitting next to me, or she sat next to me as I watched this, and she said, wow, the sexism here is pretty serious. And I said, well, this is worse than your... I mean, it's bad, but this is really bad. Like,
this is really bad.
But that opening scene where she was complaining. She was saying, oh, look, so it's Dick Shawn and that guy, unnamed, but Orson Welles, and then just a bunch of women scantily clad. And I said, oh, it's worse than that. They just bet one of the women in the poker game.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not good, but before we get further in this episode, I'd like to introduce a new segment called "Who Died at Phil and Jason's Alma Mater."
Oh no!
Probably
I just want to mention
people,
it,
but one person in specific.
Lots of people did, as we know, because we worked on the newspaper there and we reported on the various deaths. There weren't that many. I mean, it's UCSD. But one of them, the year before I went to UCSD, in fact, in 1987, was Dick Shawn, who died on stage during a stand-up comedy performance at the Mandeville Auditorium, right next to the Hump and the old gym and the student center. UCSD students are loving this. But you may know Dick Shawn most from his role in The Producers, where he's the playwright.
And also, it's a mad world.
No, he's not the playwright. He's LSD, who winds up...
Oh, no, you're right.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
You're right.
Yes. Kenny Mars.
He's Hitler. He's the Hitler.
Yeah.
He's the hippie
myself,
who becomes Hitler.
Baby.
That's right. That's right. The worst casting possible for Hitler. Yes, Dick Shawn.
Yes.
Anyway, the answer to who died on the campus of Phil and Jason's alma mater is Dick Shawn.
Yes.
So,
in performance, in such a way that... people thought it was part
of
the act.
People thought it was part of the joke.
He lay there on the stage for quite a while, and people were like, he's still not moving.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yes, kind of an infamous thing, and it happened UCSD.
I think there is an actual book, and if I had done any research, I would have mentioned the title. There's a book about, like, literally people who died mid-performance, and this is one of the classic cases, as well as the dad of Bob Einstein and Albert Brooks.
Park Your Carcass.
Park Your Carcass died during a friar's roast.
The book is called The Show Won't Go On.
That's
oh
right.
My goodness!
Yes.
The most
yes.
shocking, bizarre, and historic deaths of performers on stage by Jeff Abraham and Bert Kearns.
Yes, Jason, full credit for doing that Google search while I was vamping away.
I searched for people who died mid-performance book, and it was the fourth link.
Only, wow.
Well, there's literally a Wikipedia page that's a list of people who died during a performance. So,
I was going to say British comedian Tommy Cooper sticks out.
You can read that book when you're staying in Hawaiian High Rise Hotel.
Yes, you can. Our sponsor, the Hawaiian High Rise Hotel. Anyway, human trafficking. It's a thing that's happening in here. Anyway, so Robin has lost a lot of things in these bets, including because he's lost to Buzz Benoit, played by Dick Shawn, a story in the next issue of his magazine. Eddie Deason appears. He is my niece's second cousin's son. My nephew, he describes him as. Eddie Deason breaks in to say, "We just beat the Washington Senators." And, of course, Orson Welles' voiceover says, "I believe the Washington Senators have not played in decades." And he said, no, the actual literal Washington Senators from Capitol Hill, which leads to Robin saying, "Well, I have a decent softball team myself. I never joke about softball." And thus sets up the ridiculous premise for what is a ridiculous and delightful, but ridiculous episode of Magnum
P.I.,
a CBS detective show in which there is no... he tries to find somebody's husband at one point, but it is the most tenuous. This is an episode about a softball game. Friday, 2 o'clock, Kalapana Park. The estate is going to be bet for a year. Robin's Nest for a year will be in the hands of basically pornographer Buzz Benoit and his... He is a playboy, wink, of questionable reputation and hordes of models, as Higgins says, with loose morals.
Yes.
That is what's on the line if they lose the softball game.
I hate to be the guy who perpetually brings up the Higgins is actually Robin Masters is a stupid plotline guy.
Yes.
But this should be the episode where this is the Rosetta Stone of why that is a terrible plotline. Because... Higgins is outraged that his entire livelihood is at stake in this softball match, as he says. So if he were really Robin Masters, he wouldn't have made that insane bet. Notwithstanding the fact that Robin Masters also shows up at the end, standing next to Higgins, and
Remington Steele. I'm just gonna say Remington Steele.
It's dumb.
It is. But, it's really dumb.
But yes, Higgins is very, very agitated that he's going to be out on the street. Magnum is not so much because, hey, nude models are going to be hanging out at my place until Buzz and Eddie Deason show up and are going to turn Magnum's guest house into the arcade.
Yep. Yeah, Magnum's going to be out on the street. Which leads to Rick saying, because TC basically says, well, I'll set up a cot for you. And Rick's like, no, I get you a condo. Real nice condo. And Higgins, I can take care of you too, although I don't know about the lads. And
yeah.
I thought for a moment, it's like, oh my God, this is the greatest spinoff ever. It is Higgins and Magnum living in a condo together.
And the way he says,
it's the Odd Couple.
The way he says, maybe not the lads, is one of the best line readings Larry Minetti has ever done, because it's sort of like this aside under his breath, like, yeah, I don't know, your dogs aren't going to get taken care of.
I like the line reading of, a nice condo, real nice.
Real nice. Yeah.
Okay. That's not bad. Well, I never joke about softball. Anyway, Magnum has an Alkaline glove, a tiger. By the way, I might as well just do it now. I want to introduce a new segment, or actually I want to bring back a classic segment, which is the Magnum hat segment.
What hat
is Magnum wearing? And the answer is, I think he has four different hats in this episode.
He does.
He's a man of many hats.
He wears many hats. Among the hats in this episode we get the Owls Tigers hat.
Sure.
That's late in the show, yeah.
Which is very late on. There is the standard Detroit Tigers hat.
Yep.
But he also has two other hats that are very weird. A red Detroit Tigers away hat.
That was the away hat
from
the time.
Red, yeah. That's unusual. We only see that in this one episode. And most offensive, a USC hat.
Yeah. Yeah, what are you doing, Magnum?
I think a friend gave him a USC hat, and so he wore it, you know, for a couple hours and then got rid of it. Because when the softball game happens, he's got his Detroit Tigers hat on again. So
yeah,
it's fine. But anyway, Magnum, four hats, two we don't see in any other episode, plus the classic Detroit Tigers hat and the Al's Tigers red hat that is delightful. And that's my Magnum hat segment. Just USC, bad hat, Magnum. Don't do it. Let's see. Higgins spots a lens cap, which leads to Magnum's admission that he has taken Mr. Masters' Nikon, which I love that. Mr. Masters' Nikon! Wow. Okay. And he's dropped it down like a hole in a construction
yes.
site. So it's typical Magnum getting...
It's the classic Magnum gets yelled at for losing Robin Masters' equipment by Higgins segment. Truly, this is... This is the romantic ideal of a Magnum episode. In that, there's no real, as you said, there's no real crimes. It's just Higgins being angry at Magnum constantly.
Constantly.
And it's Robin causing all sorts of chaos from afar. It's great.
And it's an episode by Ruben Leder, who had been writing for it from the beginning, pretty much, and. He's the man behind the Luther Gillis episodes, so he knows being angry at Magnum.
So this is also he explains that I was there on the construction site because I'm looking for Lola Stenhauser's husband, and he says I don't care about Lola Stenhauser, but he will because she's on the softball team, you see, and he's very offended by that. My God, it's not even cricket, he says at one point. But we see the softball team, you know, they're the paddlers. Of the King Command Man Club, they are going to have to win if they're going to stave off awful Dick Shawn from taking over the estate for a year. And we get to see them practicing. Lola is the second baseman. She's very concerned about her husband, who she can't find. She bats a ball back to Rick and hits him in the stomach. Yeah, 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 the stomach.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Between the legs where he keeps his stomach. But I will just,
like
I just
I
wanted
said,
to
he's
say,
a tiny, tiny man.
Baseball diamonds in Hawaii are one of my favorite things in the world. I love just people are like playing baseball and then there's like palm trees and mountains and stuff in the background. It's the best. I love those shots. And every time they're playing baseball, whether it's softball or the youth baseball or whatever in Magnum PI, I can't get enough of that. It's such a great, amazing combination. It's great. And I will admit one of my little pastimes is, baseball diamonds in unusual places. Because I think it's kind of a beautiful juxtaposition. I found a baseball diamond out in Hana. At the end of the road to Hana on Maui, there is a baseball diamond right by a beach.
Oh, wow.
And it's as beautiful as you might think. And I found there's a baseball diamond in Yosemite National Park down in the valley that I've also been to, which
nice.
Is quite a strange thing. But here, just, you know,
and,
they're just out
there.
And park.
I get photos of all of these baseball diamonds.
And then who do I send those pictures to?
Yep.
Phil. Because he's the only one who understands me.
Yep.
The only unusual baseball diamond I know is the minor league park in Albuquerque, which I've been to several games there. It's lovely.
The Isotopes.
Isotopes now. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I got Tommy Lasorda to autograph a ball when they were still the Albuquerque Dukes.
I've never been to
New
Mexico.
They were the Dodger team.
So that's why this isn't the Breaking Bad podcast. I've never been to New Mexico.
Oh, okay.
Buzz has decided he's going to put up a tiger tent right on the lawn at the estate. And he's going to use Higgins as a butler. But Magnum gets a very good laugh because the models are playing baseball because this is an extremely sexist episode and they're bad. And he thinks, oh, yes, we'll handle them fine, which, of course, we all know is not going to happen. That's not what it is. But Magnum makes that assumption and laughs and laughs and laughs. And that leads to what I would say is the strangest scene in this entire episode, which is when Magnum enters the bar only for construction workers.
Yes.
The last rivet.
Only for construction workers. They are all wearing their hard hats.
Well, you have to for safety reasons.
If you're drinking in the middle of the day,
yeah, in the bar,
and you're going to be building stuff, yeah, you want the hard hat.
Also, that's the way that you know that the only that you're that only construction workers are there, because if a civilian walks in off the street, no hard hat.
Mm. Like Magnum, they immediately say you should be at another bar.
The music stops, and he's like, I think you want the place down the street. He's like, no, I'm in the right place.
And so then they surround him, and he says that he's from the State Bureau of Construction Safety. Amazing.
Word McNerdy.
He waves his fake badge around and says, well, you know, we're people drinking on the job. We've had a lot of that, like right now at lunchtime. They're drinking on the job, and it's dangerous. But I'm really just looking for the one guy. If you could tell me where the one guy is, then. And they all just run away and knock him flat, and then he run away.
No, they run him away like it's a Warner Brothers cartoon.
Yes. Yeah,
it's
there's
very
a little
Looney
stampede,
Tunes.
and we cut to Magnum on the ground like he's been steamrolled.
Yes, exactly. And an old man sitting at the bar says, "Oh, I can tell you where to get him." He says, "Well, why didn't you run away?" He says, "I'm retired." But I'll point out, he's retired, but he also knows exactly where everybody works and is still wearing a hard hat.
Still wearing a hard hat. That's what I was going to say.
It's ridiculous.
He knows how to blend in.
I feel like Ruben Leder got to this scene. He's like, I know what to do here. And nobody stopped him. Nobody stopped him from doing the construction worker bar scene with the comedy cartoon bits. It's fine. This was on CBS, people. This was a highly rated episode of one of the highest rated shows on TV at the time in November of 1983. And they were doing stuff like this. It's okay. Mm-hmm. It's okay. Who needs a crime? Eddie Deason asks Higgins if he has a 00 number.
Because the Queen occasionally makes use of my services.
Mm, yep.
Oh, do you have a 00 number? Mm,
silent rebuke there. And meanwhile, there's a photo shoot going on in Higgins' office. The lads are posing. What are you doing? Oh, it's Miss August. He tells the lads to come. The lads don't come because apparently they enjoy looking at naked women. This is when my wife turned to me and said, wow, this is a really sexist episode. And I said, it's worse than usual. It's worse than usual.
What was your reaction to the line when TC and Rick are arguing? And TC says something like, at least my mama is a girl. You just throw like one. And I was all, oh, God,
not,
no. Please, TC. Not cool.
Not well received.
Not well received in our household either.
No.
Let me tell you that.
I just have to say, I'm maybe not surprised that Robin Master's dogs would also be attracted to blonde buxom
he's trained them
they see it all the time likely with when Robin's at the estate with all those Swedes running
all the
around
Swedes. All the Swedish stewardesses
Lola is just very excited she's going to be reunited with the man she loves, because even though they're estranged, she hates him but she loves him. But watch out, Magnum, there's one thing you need to know. It's Friday, or you're going to go get him tomorrow. That tomorrow is Friday. Jerome doesn't like Fridays. Hangs
Bad
in the air. But
happen.
The real trouble before we get there is the Blasters are in town. They're a team of ringers. That's not fair, Magnum says. And Benoit's like, I don't care. This is what life is like. Life's not fair.
Oh, no, I love this line. I wrote this line down. He's like, I think you've figured out the secret of the world, Magnum.
Mm-hmm. It's not fair.
That's not fair.
My favorite TC line, now that I've said the TC line that I did not like, is when they're taking note of the Blasters and that they're ringers, TC looks at one of the players and goes, Steroid City. And it's a normal sized woman pitching.
Just a perfectly normal woman. He says Steroid City.
Yeah, it's not like the 1976 East German swim team has swaddled into town.
It's an editing mistake. I think it was supposed to show one of the guys, and the editor showed a woman instead, and it was a mistake.
Yeah.
Because the dialogue doesn't work at all.
Not in the least.
Magnum finds Jerome. Jerome immediately punches Magnum and runs away. Magnum catches
Jerome
him.
Kapowitz, because Polish names are inherently funny.
Yep. He swings a board at him. This is the moment where I realize, hey, this is the guy from CPO Sharky.
Yes, thank you.
Yep.
That's exactly why I know him, Peter Isaacson.
Yep, exactly. She can have the money. He says, she doesn't want the money. She wants you back. Nothing good. It's Friday. Nothing good happens on Friday. But he swings that 2x4 at Magnum, and Magnum's like, say, you swing that piece of wood very well. Perhaps you would like to... Wait a second. You're Jerome Bad Friday Kapowitz. You played with the mm-hmm. White Sox. And he says, yep, that was me. And, I met Lola. She could play a sweet second base, he says.
And we find out
the origin story of that Bad Friday nickname is that he couldn't hit on Fridays, and a Cleveland paper pointed that out, and so he decked the reporter and had to flee as far as he could from Cleveland, which is apparently Hawaii,
and change his name.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And quit the game.
And quit the game. But now the Paddlers have their own rigor. Lola, because they're running short on time, they don't have enough script. Lola punches him because she's really in this "I hate you, I love you" kind of thing. Now he's seeing double, so Higgins has to use acupressure on his feet and hands in order to get him to not see double anymore. There's some shtick there. Rick says it's acupuncture. Why are there no needles, Higgins? I said acupressure. All of that is going on, which leads to the important part of this episode, which is a game is played. Higgins is the third base coach. My notes say Higgins as third base coach is amazing. He's got both arms whirling around. Yeah. There's a montage.
He's doing those signals. His signals are beautiful.
This game has two separate montages in it. Rick strikes out a lot.
Man, does he strike out a lot. In baseball, when you strike out four times, it's called the golden sombrero. And he has so many sombreros.
He's the platinum.
Of all sorts of metallic colors.
He's got like a strontium sombrero.
Yes.
He's going up the periodic table. Californium sombrero.
Seaborgium.
I would also like to point out...
Yep, Glenn T. Seaborg. Good knowledge.
And I think I have mentioned this on the podcast before, but when I lived in Los Angeles, in Manhattan Beach, there's a beach volleyball tournament every year. Mm-hmm. And you bring your friends and people wear costumes and it's fun. And one year I came across a team of Magnums playing in the beach volleyball tournament.
Wow.
And their coach dressed up as Higgins from this episode.
So I think in the
full major domo brown outfit, and he was doing the waving of the arms and the standing on the sideline. His job was to also hold the boombox that played the Magnum PI theme on continuous loop during the match.
Oh my god.
And oh man, I was riveted. It was a wonderful, wonderful way to spend an afternoon watching these guys play beach, watching a team of Magnum PIs.
Fantastic.
Playing volleyball.
After the montage, it's the ninth inning. Time to get rid of these turkeys. Magnum says. But oh no.
They're up by five runs.
Three up, three down.
Yeah, but see, the problem is that Buzz Benoit has recognized the star ringer, Jerome Bad Friday Kapowitz, has gotten federal agents to come out to arrest him and take him back.
Federal Marshal Homer Knowlton.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Another, just like the FBI agent in the Missing Melody episode, it's an extremely white fellow.
It's funny you should say that. I'd like to introduce a segment called He Has That Kind of Face.
Yes.
It's the same actor as FBI agent John Esten, except Homer Knowlton appears in two episodes.
It's Peter Graves? It's the same actor.
Bob Fimiani. He is also in The Love for Sailboat with another lookalike.
I would assume that he was a local actor who they just could call at a moment's notice.
You're not going to believe this, but he's in seven. Yes, he's in seven episodes of Magnum PI because he's also a veterinarian. He's Homer Knowlton in two episodes. He's a CIA agent, an FBI agent, and a naval captain.
See, now I'm beginning to think that I've seen you before. I just have the face people recognize from the Missing Melody episode. It is them having a little laugh.
I think
the,
so.
At the
so.
Fact that this guy keeps getting cast.
Yeah, because when he shows up here, I'm like, wait a second.
And he does also do a Joss Whedon trifecta. He's in an episode of Buffy, an episode of Angel, and an episode of Firefly.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Great.
Go figure.
He was not, and he only has 16 credits. That's the amazing thing. Yeah. So he must have been like a local actor somewhere who somebody knew. Anyway, they like, you can't arrest our guy. What about the Statue of Limitations? And that's the, but isn't that New York City? And we get the TC take of, huh? To that, yeah. Because it's a joke. It's like the equivalent of a rim shot, right? Is the TC take. On that, so good.
God bless you, Roger Mosley.
Yes, 8 runs in the ninth inning after removing Bad Friday Killer. So they're down 13-10. This is that moment where it's like, I can get you a nice condo, real nice, and you too, Higgins. Magnum takes a dip of man chewing tobacco. Man,
blank man,
blank red, yeah, tape over red man. Chewing tobacco, offer some to Higgins.
This is another sign of that we're watching a TV show that's nearly 40 years old, is that the actor is the main character, our beloved character, is using dip. And yeah. no one is saying boo about it.
Yeah, I actually thought, like, this is a weird choice, and then he's not, like, spitting or anything in the rest of the episode. I think that somebody wrote down, what are the baseball cliches we can get into this episode? Mm-hmm. And the chewing tobacco is one of them. And so we get it here.
See, it would have been funnier if they, and I realize there's since they can't show Ridman on the screen, this was when Big League Chew was actually becoming very popular, the bubble gum, because it's all, hey, you want to stuff stuff in your cheeks like a chipmunk? Put in gum, because you won't die from cavities, but you will die from lesions on your cheek and gum.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have been funnier.
Yeah.
It would have been. If you're like, come on, Higgins, it's gum.
But it would way have been more in line with Magnum. He's not serious.
Again, I think it's a checkbox. I think it's literally they're like, this is a baseball thing. We'll do this as a bit. Mm-hmm. There's two.
And how many different covers of Take Me Out to the Ball Game?
Oh, there's in the montages, there's so many. Oh, my God. So now another favorite, because this is, you know, like an 80s movie. This is an 80s TV show. And it's got this moment that I feels like a thing you'd see in an 80s movie, which is they get two outs, at which point Buzz Benoit says, now we celebrate, and pops the champagne. And I'm like, with two outs, you celebrate? Now you celebrate with two outs, really? Magnum gives a big speech.
So he can get his comeuppance, you see.
Yeah, Magnum gives a big speech, and it's great because the voiceover is, I know what you're thinking. You think I'm going to give the big speech here, and I am.
And I'm not going to disappoint you.
Yeah.
I love that.
And he's like, oh,
that
Rick.
Is a great.
Rick's the worst player on the team. Cut to Rick. Yeah, he can't hit. Cut back to Rick again. But we're going to do it for Rick and everybody else. Yay! And Rick hits a leaky ground ball into the outfield, somehow gets through.
Texas, or the CNI ground CNI? Ball. Yeah.
Yeah, and then TC hits the Texas leaguer that falls between the infielder and two outfielders. And then Magnum clouts it down the line. And as he's rounding the bases, I'm thinking, oh, Higgins is going to put up the stop sign. You got to stop at third, Magnum. Higgins then, they show Higgins put up the stop sign.
And literally does the slow motion. No!
But Magnum's voiceover is like, I really just was going to run until I die.
I was full of heart. I knew I could do it.
I knew
I could make it.
And at the close play,
bam, they bad news bears him.
You're out!
Yep.
And so that's it. I mean, that's the end of the show.
Not since Kelly Leak was thrown out at the plate in the Bears versus Yankees final of the 1976 Little League Championship in whatever horrible San Fernando Valley town they lived in.
So
heartbreaking.
We cut back to the office. Higgins is telling someone that he'll be out shortly. It turns out it's Magnum, who's sitting at Higgins' desk playing with the BB deck of the Buzz Benoit cards we saw in the first scene. Eddie Deason comes in carrying
a
picture.
Well, he's playing solitaire. He's laying them out.
Eddie Deason comes in playing carrying a picture of a Mona Lisa wearing just a bikini top, which I thought was a really nice touch.
Yes. The sexiest of the old masters.
Yes. Oh, man. It's so like take that, Louvre. I got you. Right? Like, what?
How many of the Mona Lisas in City of Death were the bikini?
Yeah, well, this is once Skaroth, the last of the Jaggeroth, got tired with the Mona Lisas. He was like, hey, can you do one with a bikini? I'll draw a sketch. And then they threw that one in there. That was at the bottom of the pile, and it was bought by Buzz Benoit. Doctor Who canon, there it is. Phil's loving this. Anyway, Eddie Deason says, hey.
Now I know how everyone feels when I start talking about
baseball
from the 1980s.
So Magnus playing cards, and Eddie Deason notices, well, why don't you flip over that one, because it's the queen or whatever. And he's like, ah, yes, the queen, because Magnum's already figured it out.
Well, it's great, because he does this wonderful read where he's just looking straight out. He's like, there's no queen there. Which one is the queen?
But it's like,
oh, that one right there.
Yeah.
And he flips it up, and
what
there it is.
Queen? Oh, yeah, it's a marked deck. Eddie Deason confirms, yeah, all his decks are marked. Which means that when they go back outside, and Magnum's already like 10 steps ahead, right? Because it turns out Magnum's already called Robin about this. So they go outside, and Buzz is like, hey, we're going to bring in all more of my tacky crap here. And he's like, not so fast. You use a marked deck.
Better put that back in the truck.
Hey, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Stop me, Magnum? No, says Robin Masters, emerging from off camera. I think you better leave. Aloha, Buzz. And that's and like, who betrayed me? And Eddie Deason says, aloha, uncle. And that's how this episode ends.
Eddie Deason.
And gives Magnum 5, because he kept giving fives to Dick Shawn the whole episode.
Yeah. And that take that, rich guy, says another rich guy.
And again, the Magnum ADR department does not disappoint. Orson Welles sounds like he's in a coffin. He's not outdoors.
Well, at this point, he may
at this point close. He was close.
Had a foot in it.
Yeah.
I at this point, since we're done with the episode, I think I would like to introduce a segment. That I'd like to call. Phil spent a lot of time scorekeeping softball games in the 1980s. Boys, I don't know if you know this about me, but I worked for the City of Pleasanton Parks and Recreation Department and the City of San Ramon Parks and Recreation Department, where my job was to scorekeep softball games. Score kept a lot of co-ed softball in my day. And let me tell you, I saw things in this episode that were shocking. Shocking, because both of the, as we've hinted at, these are co-ed softball teams playing. Generally in co-ed softball, you have to hit man, woman in your lineup, right. So that you can't bury your weak hitters and Rick at the bottom of the order. Also, generally in softball, you have to position man, woman, so that first base and second base have to be a man and a woman in either position. Same with shortstop and third base. But what about the outfielders? There's only three outfielders. Ah, but in softball, they have a rover. Check and mate, friend. And pitcher and catcher are man and woman. So, expressly against the rules of co-ed softball, would not be sanctioned officially. And I think this is the most egregious cheating, even more so than the marked deck.
Is there a woman on the paddlers other than Lola?
No. Not that we can really
I don't
see.
Think so. No, yeah.
I don't think so. I think it's just Lola.
Yeah. Really, there's no one besides Lola and Kyoki that we can see from besides
there's that old guy who doesn't really do anything except throw up his hands every now and then.
And there's the guy on the bench who really wants to be put in, but they don't let him because Rick is going to do it instead. Yeah, exactly. Kyoki's pretty much had enough, right? He's like, why are you letting Rick hit? Shut up, Kyoki.
There's one scene where they're just obsessed with moonball. Throw the moonball over and over again.
I don't
one of the practices.
I don't know who that is, because again, in slow pitch softball, the arc of the underhand throw has to be at least 6 feet tall, but no more than 12 feet. Otherwise, it's an illegal pitch. You can't throw an Ephus pitch in softball.
I mean, there's pretty much one pitch, right?
Yeah.
It's not like baseball.
Between 6 and 12 feet, it has to arc at.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, my first night on the job, I saw someone get attacked with a baseball bat. That was fun. Highly recommend the world of softball scorekeeping.
This says so much about your teenage years.
Yeah, it really does, doesn't it? Anyhow, Doctor Who. So,
The Mona Lisa. It's in The City of Death by Douglas Adams. You can check that out. That's a different podcast.
I will be
not
sure
Magnum
to do
podcast.
That.
Although,
writing
I will
it down
say,
right now. What went, Doctor? What?
No,
it's Doctor How.
Doctor Who's on first.
I don't give a damn. Okay.
Oh no.
What do you mean they're days on the team?
Oh boy.
I gotta say, it's not my favorite episode, but I love the fact that they make Orson Welles say ridiculous things. I mean, whatever was with that frozen peas commercial or whatever is the one that he's like, this is awful.
No money is worth this.
Nothing. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
How is any of this any better than what was in that commercial?
I know a farm in the American Far West where Charlie Briggs takes the finest ground beef. Yes, it's pretty bad.
Crumb crisp coating. Yeah, I don't know. I would love to know the story of Orson Welles being the voice of Robin Masters, and whether it was simply because, like, I mean, he was taking any job for money.
I hate to cut to the chase, but Orson needed the money.
I know he needed the money, but I just like I think it's interesting. Like, either there are amazing outtakes of this, or I think he probably looked at this and be like, oh yeah, okay, shadowy figure, great. You know, like that. Mm-hmm. That this was like he got it. He didn't consider this. My guess is he didn't consider this debasing himself in the same way as the crumb crisp coating did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, they do give him some ridiculous. There are moments where Orson Welles is saying things, and I'm thinking, "Oh man, it's Orson Welles. Why did you make him say that? Why did you make him say that ridiculous thing?"
I wouldn't direct any living actor to do Shakespeare like this. Come on, fellas, you're losing your heads.
I don't know if I mentioned this the last time, but I'm going to do it now. So this is since we were already touching on it, and I'm just going to make Phil angry, I'd like to introduce a new segment called Doctor Who actors who have appeared on Magnum PI.
Okay, I'm gonna go take a lap.
Now, Phil, you remember when they went to London, and there were lots of Doctor Who actors in that one, like Peter Davison, who was literally playing his part from All Creatures Great and Small as the guy who was like Higgins Jr. at the castle.
You literally had Julian Glover, who is Count Scarlione,
who is from The City of Death by Douglas Adams. Absolutely.
It's all connected.
Many Doctor Who actors. Because here's the thing about Magnum P.I. Although Higgins is played by a Texan, Magnum P.I. did, after that, have a great predilection for casting random English actors. And occasionally, a New Zealand actor as a cowboy, but mostly English actors as people who knew Higgins or know Robin.
Ian McShane, twice.
Yeah. Yeah, so there are a lot of those. I just wanted to point out that Maurice Reeves, who was in the Holmes is Where the Heart episode that we talked about on this podcast, was in a Doctor Who episode that aired the same day on the BBC as his Magnum episode aired on CBS.
Wow.
And that is a special moment. That was the Caves of Androzani.
With Peter
Davison in it, no less. So that's my
that is niche.
That's my Doctor Who Magnum segment crossover. But you're right, Julian Glover is really the ideal one, right? And he was in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. Mm-hmm. He's in lots of stuff, Julian Glover.
Yep.
All right. Well, that
he was the villain in QED with Sam Waterston, which ran for 6 episodes.
I think that brings us to the end of this episode. Unless you have more things to talk about, Phil. Any other softball anecdotes you'd like to share?
No, I have nothing further to say on the softball front. Wonder how Eddie Deason did not get cast in Revenge of the Nerds, but that's a discussion for another time.
Oh God, yeah. I will say Tom Selleck hits pretty well.
Yeah.
Sure. Bats left, throws right.
That's it.
Interesting.
Oh, that's true. Mm-hmm. That's true. I get that because I do things opposite.
Now, all right, let's before we go, I'm gonna throw out another segment here, which is, what is your definitive Eddie Deason performance? Is there a particular Eddie Deason that you think, well, that's my Eddie Deason, that one?
Okay, well, I'll claim it. I think when I see Eddie Deason, I think, oh, it's the guy from Grease, because he was also in Grease too.
Yes,
one of the few, one of the handful of actors to be in both Grease movies.
What about you, David?
Fair enough.
What's your definitive Deason? That's the new name of this segment, Deason. The definitive Deason. It just happened just then.
Wow. I mean, there's Follow That Bird.
You're
just listing credits now. You got to pick me a definitive Deason.
I'm thinking. I mean, Dorf's Golf Bible. He's in a couple of Dorf things.
Yeah, well.
Goes Auto Racing as Dipstick.
You're just reading his IMDb page now. That does not count.
When you can get Tim Conway as Dorf and Eddie Deason on the screen at the same time, you make the call. You make that happen.
That is magic.
There's a very obvious answer.
Yes.
I'll give you my definitive Deason. I would go with this one because
Deason's
performances are all the same.
Well, my definitive Deason is you're giving away all our best tricks. It's the hacker from War Games.
Yeah.
The back doors. Back doors. Yeah. You're giving away our best tricks. That's my definitive Deason. War Games.
I mean, he was good on The Fall Guy.
Yes. Sure.
He was good in Scooby-Doo in Arabian Nights.
Thank you. I'd like to change the segment's name again to David Reads Eddie Deason's IMDb page.
You could also make the case, I would not make this case, you could also make the case that he's the best thing about 1941.
Yeah.
The movie, not the year.
Yeah. No.
Oh, you know...
He was born in 1957. He was definitely not related to the year.
Yes.
He's one of the voices in the horrible Uncanny Valley Polar Express movie.
He was.
And he's actually good in that.
He's a good voice actor.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Have you seen Eddie Deason? he looks very much like a voice actor, doesn't he?
He played himself in I Love You, Eddie Deason.
And that brings us to the end of this episode of Magnum Podcast. I have been Jason Snell. They have been their usual selves, Philip Michaels and J. Lohr. Bye, guys.
There's a movie called The Love Suckers.
The Softball Association shall hear of these crimes committed by Magnum and his friends, I tell you.